Welcome to the on-demand version of the Naked American Songbook. You know what that means. We're not allowed to play the entire song that we're talking about on the on-demand version. That's due to strange, antiquated copyright restrictions that we are working to change. In the meantime, however, you can still hear my beautiful friendship with Darren Criss begin to blossom as we get naked. Good morrow, gentle listeners. Brevity is the soul of wit, so Shakespeare said, and, well, yes. Centuries later, Sid Caesar put it this way, faster is funnier.
Faster is funnier.
And just yesterday, my producer said, hurry up. So, I got the point, I got the message, and to prove my vigilance, I will be brief. My guest today on the Naked American Songbook is Darren Criss, the totally talented, absolutely adorable, fiendishly fuckable star of TV's Glee, and recently both the Broadway production and the national tour of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. This guy is a tornado of talent and a gushing font of ideas, of passion, purpose, a prolapse prognosticator on subjects as varied as the genius of Cole Porter to the proper placement of a microphone. The guy just has so much to say, but because every word is a gem and he is such a joy to work with, I want you to enjoy as much of this guy as possible, so I'm going to get out of the way. I'm going to start us off with one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite singers, but importantly, also the shortest song from one of my favorite singers, the title track from Carly Simon's 1974 masterpiece, Hot Cakes. Don't blink, gentle people of Verona. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook.
Says spittle on the griddle as you drop that batter into that hot butter. Round and brown, piping hot, like as not, what we got is hot cakes. Hubba, 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 puffing up fluffy and sweet. Now wait, and now flip it.
That is the great Carly Simon from 1970, the title song of her master stroke. Hotcakes. Speaking of master stroking hotcakes, my guest today is young Renaissance man Darren Criss. Hi, Darren.
Dude, hey, I'm so glad to be here. I've been really excited about this.
Like, I'm excited that you're excited, and I sensed your excitement, and that's why I went for it.
I'm glad.
The breadth and depth of your career at this point, and I don't know, you're young. You're what, 20, 30?
29, almost okay. 30, yeah.
All right, well, you look younger.
In the twilight of my 20s.
And when we met, which was very recently, we're doing something with you we've never done here on the show, which is I don't know in advance what you're going to tell me. I don't know what songs that you brought,
yeah.
The songs that really shaped you into the man that you have become. But let me see if I can guess.
Hit me. I think this is way cooler. I like that you don't know much about me. And I like that we don't know much about each other because that is the point of conversation.
We're getting to know each other.
We are getting to know you.
Getting to know you. Getting to know all about you.
All right, let's choose your favorite song on that list that you brought.
Okay.
Can we play 20 questions?
Sure. I'll just pick, because they're all favorites. Like I said earlier, it's impossible for me to pick one favorite.
But why is it so hard for you to pick a favorite? Like, what do all these songs mean to you?
It's the palette is so varied. It's like there's songs that have to do with how well constructed they are. Then there's records that are produced really well. Mm-hmm. Then there's like a singer that did a particular arrangement. And then there's context of, I always say taste is all based on personal context. You could see like the most terrible movie, but you saw it with your first love on the most magical night of your life, that movie's bulletproof for the rest of your life. So it's like there's all kinds of things that factor in. Anyway, let's try. I'm looking at one right now.
Okay. Is it sung by a woman?
No.
Is it sung by a man?
I wish I had something. No.
I'm getting there. Fast. Is the recording from before 1960?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Groovy.
Yeah.
Is it sung by Frank Sinatra?
No.
You don't like Sinatra? You
just I like made Sinatra. A face. No, but
do you know where we are?
Listen, don't get me wrong. He's like the Beatles of standard singers.
Well, I don't know. No, I don't know.
So, no, it's not Sinatra.
Not Sinatra. Is it Mel Torme?
No, but he is one of my top favorites.
All right, we're doing okay. I haven't started disliking you yet. Is he American?
Yeah. There's a lot of them, dude. That's
but probably, I mean, a good one.
That's probably the broadest.
Is it Bobby Darin? No, because that's no. Campy. You're not looking for camp. You're looking for something real.
Yeah.
All right, just tell me.
Chet.
Oh, you know what? When I was taking a shower today and I was thinking about this interview, I was like, he's going to say Chet Baker. I know he's going to say Chet Baker.
Well, you blew it because it
God
didn't happen.
Damn it.
In this universe, there will never be a situation where you said that before me. I'm sorry to.
Is it Chet Baker?
Yes. Well Woo! Done. Oh,
okay,
you're
going to
edit that, you piece of shit. I knew it. I walked right into that one.
Tell me about when you came to Chet Baker.
I forget what record it was. I think it was in college.
It stopped you in your tracks?
Just one of my all-time favorite recordings, one of my favorite songs.
What is it?
There'll Never Be Another You.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah. That song, for a number of reasons, I always tell people it's the best breakup song ever. There's a couple of different roads you can go down with breakup songs. One, like, that was great, see you later, or like, you know, F*** you, I hated you, and it's all over. And this song rides the line between, which Chet always did, between heartbreak and love. Maybe other nights like this, many lips that I may kiss, but
they won't
charm
me.
They won't like, you as used to do.
No, I may dream a million dreams, but
how can they come true when there will never be another you. I mean,
it's good stuff. I've never thought of it as a breakup song. Because the lyric is, there may be,
exactly. You can take it either way. But at the time, back to the whole contextual personal thing, you know, when I was
Breaking up at the time?
Oh, in college, yeah, I was breaking up with my girlfriend. But anytime anybody breaks up with anybody or there's any sort of sense of loss, I always go, God, there's such a bittersweet, beautiful idea to there will never, and that's fine. And that's okay. There's never going to be another you. And like, I'm okay with that.
That's beautifully said. Yeah. I have to say my favorite version of this song belongs to Sarah Vaughan.
Oh, cool.
Who rips through it at a very, very fast tempo.
There may be many other nights like this. I'll be sharing here with someone new.
I mean, she's one of my favorites, but sometimes I'll say that she doesn't exactly live a song's lyrics in the way that Chet does on this.
Right.
And his tempo and his sadness that just drips off of him makes it into a breakup song.
Right.
Where when I hear Sarah Vaughan sing it, it sounds to me like she's really celebrating.
I love you so much
person.
And there's never going to be another you. But that's one of the great things about that tune is that it does have very different meanings and it is on how you arrange.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Because what I want to do is listen to Chet Baker sing There'll Never Be Another You. And I'm picturing you breaking up with your girlfriend in college.
I mean, listen to him on the trumpet.
Yes, I may dream a million dreams, but how can they come true if there will never, ever be another you?
The mournful sounds of trumpeter and crooner, the late Chet Baker, with a little bit of the early Darren Criss.
It was a great ending. And he's playing this live, putting it down.
Yeah, his voice is magic.
It's magic.
Now that you're playing him for me, I'm regretting that I don't spend more time listening to him.
That album is one of my favorites. It Could Happen to You.
Yeah, everything about that record is gorgeous. And it was a surprise for the world.
That record or that album? The record of It Could Happen to You?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think people just really were blown away by Chet Baker at that time. Give me another song off that list. No, let me guess.
Okay. Does it have to be Chet or can we move on to other people?
No, let's move on to other people.
Okay.
I want to really get a complete picture of your musical psyche. I want to really know you by the time this is over just based on the songs that you love.
Well, the rest one are just songs. They're not necessarily particular recordings.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So Chet Baker was the only one that was connected to an actual singer singing an actual song.
Yes, because the reason why Never Be Another You is great is because you were talking about Sarah Vaughan and how I dig it when songs sound like the song.
Ah,
the recorded
you
like
do.
The song. You know,
are you about to tell me that Sarah Vaughan goes too far for you?
No, it's cool because what she did is she incited this notion of it being like a happy song, which frankly I'd never even realized till now because I was so knee-deep in thinking that it was only this kind of sad tune.
There may be many other nights like this. I'll be standing here with someone new. There may be other songs to sing, another fall, another spring. There will never be another you.
I'm glad I gave you something today.
You did, thank you.
Other than herpes.
And popcorn. what's a tune like? One of my favorites is on the opposite side of Never Be Another You, which is, it was just one of those things.
This is a Cole Porter tune.
Cole Porter, yeah.
Right.
Ella has a version that's much more down-tempo, and hers is more sort of melancholy.
Just one of those things. Just one of those crazy flings.
It was just one of those things like, oh God, what did I do? Or like, you know, that'll never happen again. Whereas the one that made me love that song was Nat King Cole's version. Like, to have a song sound like it feels, Nat's version is like this man about town, like, oops, well, bye.
Let's listen to that one then.
It was just one of those things. Just one of those crazy flings. One of those bells that now and then rings. Just one of those things. It was just one of those nights. Just one of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things. Just one of those bells that now and then ring. Just one of those things. A trip to the moon on gossamer wings. Just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love affair was too hot not to cool down. So goodbye, dear, and amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. It was great fun, but it was just one of those things.
Sounds like the theme from Bewitched.
Kind of. Well, it's got that hot, sexy kind of like mid-60s jazz thing. Yeah, it's so sexy.
Nat King Cole killing it on Just One of Those Things by the great Cole Porter.
Cool. I did this documentary for Stephen Sondheim. It was a really great experience. It's called Six by Sondheim. It's for HBO. Everyone should check it out if you know nothing or love Sondheim. And he talks about this song when he talks about songwriting.
But when I write with myself, I do what Cole Porter did. I found by going through his papers at the Library of Congress that he would take his title line, like it was just one of those things, and he would write it out rhythmically. It was just one of those things. On music paper, but with no notes attached, only the rhythm. And from that, he would extrapolate the melody. The inflection of the title would give him the rise and fall of the melody, and the rhythm of the title would give him the rhythm of the melody.
It was just one of those things.
Sondheim is talking about song construction and when you're writing phrasing, the rise and fall of words, how Cole Porter wouldn't write notes out, he would write rhythms out. It was just one of those things. If I'm talking to you, I'm saying, man, it was just one of those things. Yeah. And you kind of write the
rhythmic value. To figure out how to scan it musically.
To scan it, exactly. Yeah. This song is so brilliant for that reason. And some of the best songs now that stay with you, the ones that scan like that. I compare it to a huge hit song now, Call Me Maybe. The reason why that song is so damn hooky. hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number. Call me, maybe. Where the notes go, where the rhythms go, it is so natural. It helps that it's a big pop song, big poppy beat and everything, but scanning-wise, it's perfect. There's no, like, call me maybe. It's just like it was just one of those things. You might as well have written out the same sort of methodology, and that's the stuff that sticks with you. That's why I always love that song, especially when I'm writing for, like, more theatrical kind of things where you try and write things in common speak.
I'm soaking what you're spilling.
Cool. Thank you.
I really am.
Cool.
I'm really glad that you said all the things you said, which is why I'm just not talking much, because I'm really interested and excited by the things that you're saying, in particular because you're starting to connect what excites you about the classic Great American Songbook with what's happening now. The connection between Cole Porter and Carly Rae Jepsen is
I was just
going to
say, I'm just really thrilled that you let the fact that I compared the two, you let that fly. I'm like, thank you for letting that soak in. I was like, God, is he going to dig on this?
I am digging it. I am soaking what you're spilling. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. More sexy songs with Glee star and Star Kid founder Darren Criss when we return.
If you're just joining us, I am Julian Fleischer, host of the Naked American Songbook. And my guest today is Darren Criss, who is wise beyond his years when it comes to the Great American Song.
It's all a ruse.
Listen, children, listen, because here is where the lessons can be found.
Well, thank you. I'm trying. This whole conversation that we've had today, I could have had with you 10 years ago.
Right.
And I would have gotten joy out of being the 20-year-old that anybody else older would be like, oh, how did you know that stuff? So as a kid, I kind of did get off on the idea of knowing things
you
that
nerded
people,
out a little bit,
that nobody expected me to know. Particularly as a kid, you know, I worked with older people in the theater as like a young person. So I was always the youngest person in the room by like a long shot. And so I always made it a point to be like, okay, I know what you know. Deal with it. And I liked that. So I think there was a certain like...
You were precocious.
Yeah, there was a precociousness to like, I'm going to know as much as possible about this music. And it also did happen to not only be cool, but made me feel cool. And it certainly paid its dividends later in life because now I have this huge lexicon of music.
Did a 13-year-old Darren Criss have a problem sharing that with other kids your age?
Not really. It's just stuff that I liked. I mean,
was it cool?
I don't think it was uncool. I just never had that.
Well, you were in San Francisco.
Construct. But still, I never had like that construct. I never went, hey guys, you know this recording? I'd just be like, this is sweet. Like, I think it's cool. Like, I don't need validation from anybody else. This is rad.
I wonder if it takes that kind of self-possession to grow up listening to this music.
I don't know anybody that doesn't think this is cool in the sort of proactive sense of it thinking that it's lame. Let me put it this way. The Rat Pack is always cool.
Right.
You know, guys in suits drinking whiskey, banging chicks and being awesome, like the height of bro-y masculinity. It's like eternal cool for like machismo
right.
dudes.
It's also a cliche now, so it feels a little like...
I don't know if it does. I mean, as a kid, even now, like the more knowledge I had about this stuff, the cooler I felt. But at the time I was absorbing this stuff, I was also absorbing, I've always loved all music at all times. It takes a lot for me to dislike right. anything. So...
You were on the show Glee,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sad to say I didn't really absorb that show much.
It's okay, no worries.
But I felt it was highly, highly produced music.
Right.
And it sounded almost machine-like, you know, like
sure.
it lacked a lot of the human quality that people bring. Although there was I was shown a video of you singing at the piano by yourself.
Oh, there was a live take. That was the only times, one of the few times we did a live take.
Right,
yeah.
And that was the one that leapt out at me, like, oh.
Before you met me. I was all right, but things were kind of heavy. You brought me to life now every February. You'll be my Valentine, Valentine. Let's go all the way tonight. No regrets, just love. We can dance until we die, you and I. We'll be young forever.
Let's talk about pop music in general now and sort of the precedent that is set with what we know to be the general compression and vocal production. Most mixed, mastered records that we hear have a certain tonality, set a precedent for what, I'm using quote fingers, popular music sounds like. You
right.
know, it's like, so if I'm mixing a record, there's a very conscious move to go, okay, is this a pop record? Is this a singer-songwriter record? And we'll dial the highs and the lows accordingly. you know, depending
people,
on what...
this is all true, what he's saying.
Yeah.
So listen up. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, like,
and this is the good stuff.
This is the fun stuff. Because it's funny when, you know, when you play a mix or something, they go, I don't know, it doesn't really sound. And you just tune it, compress it, put it all away. They go, yeah, it sounds cool. And you're like, I didn't change a thing.
Right.
So here's what brings us to Glee. Glee is at the center of the pop zeitgeist, you know, however many years ago, and you are producing popular music.
Right.
And there are certain things that the ear unconsciously expects, especially when you're not a musician and you don't care about the frequencies of things. You just go, give me dessert. And that's not a bad thing.
All the cheese with no broccoli.
I will say all the singers on that show, with all of my love and respect to our producers who had the hardest job on that show, because they had to, from scratch, because they weren't given the stems from the original from the original sessions, they had to build everything from scratch and like produce full on ready for iTunes records like 7 or 8 times a week constantly for like 6 years. I mean, that is madness. That is inherently absurd and unfair.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of these guys who are great singers, things are coming out and they have to sound a certain way. And, you know, I think sometimes they did capture some really great things, and sometimes,
oh, it's great.
You know, it changed.
It's just,
I mean, there were times I felt like really tuned, but I went, thank God, because I was sick that day or something like that, you know, because I too have to go in and sing however often that I would have to. And you're album ready every day, you know, and that's insane. You know, if I was recording artists like Nat and we had we're recording this record in March and I came in with a sinus infection, I'd be like, okay, well, let's hold off.
Right.
You know, let's wait to get better. And let's get this right, because this is forever. You know, it's only forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd like to tell people though, that a lot of the singers, sometimes I'd hear something and go, oh man, like I wish people could hear you the way that I hear you. Like, you are a good singer.
And as you said, it's just a taste thing. You know, like I found myself over the last decade just retreating and retreating and retreating from pop radio more and more because it's all so compressed at this point that it's just loud to me. It's just, I personally respond to dynamics. I respond to warmth and depth and dimension. You know, those things that we were talking about that have to do with singer-songwriters or from the era that this show focuses on, you know, I like that stuff.
Right.
You'd think that people would have had enough of silly love songs. But I look around me and I see it isn't so. Some people want to fill the world with silly love songs. And what's wrong?
I come alive when I hear that stuff, when I hear the human being behind it, the flaws, the cracks, the strangeness.
Well, I will say, though, what's cool about that, because, you know, a lot of people share that view. I fight for both sides. I love contemporary music. I think there's so much to learn from pop music and even stuff that, you know, we were talking about how, God, this is going to be a long rant, how more and more people felt, oh, like rock and roll, I feel like I could sing this and like I can contribute to what is popular because I don't sound like Nat King Cole, but I sound like this when I play guitar, and that's cool. The same thing happened with songwriting and the kind of high sky love above is now a time-honored cliche. There's a question you asked, lyrics that blow your mind. Right?
Yes.
And there are so many great lyrics on the earlier half of the 20th century because of the need for pure rhymes and perfect rhymes and really beautiful usages of things that are now cliches. And so when you have half rhymes and pop rhymes and you rhyme table with chair, something that is egregious that would make, you know, Irving Berlin's skin crawl.
For me right now?
I couldn't do it, but I'm just saying there's been worse rhymes in pop music.
I need an example of a table chair rhyme.
But you know what I'm talking about. In pop rhymes, there's all kinds of silly rhymes. And
it's a response to what came before.
It's a response, exactly. Right. And I think that's just inevitable. So having said that, with the way people sing now and how things are recorded, you know, it is a response to whatever came before. And I do believe that the pendulum will always swing backwards. And I do also believe in the resilience of like true artistry. So when you have, to me, it's no wonder that, like, you know, someone like Adele comes out, a singer, just a singer, that's just her deal, who has an awesome voice and who sings great songs. That's what cuts through. And you go, oh, sweet, cool. Well, people aren't idiots. Like, this is amazing. Everyone's on the same page about Adele for the most part. And one of her biggest records and what won Record of the Year was a demo where her voice cracks on Someone Like You. And that's the real human stuff that people go, absolutely. So to me, no matter what, those qualities that you were talking about will always prevail. People will always respond to that stuff, which makes me so happy. I hope to resurrect this at some point. And maybe Glee helped out a little bit with this notion that at the time of standard singers, they became standards. The very nature of the word standards is because a bunch of different artists would cut a big song.
Right. Like, sometimes they'd be on the radio at the same time.
Exactly. So the idea of Beyonce cutting a Rihanna song is like, that's insane. Even though that's not too dissimilar, what would have been kind of going on. If it's like a good song, it's a good song. You know, it sometimes happens, like country artists do country versions of a pop song that maybe came out like 2 years ago. But it's weird there isn't this sort of trading of good songs. It happens all the time. And I used to do it in college, and I wish I did it more because I probably would have made more money. I used to always do kind of weird covers of classic songs. How many previews, movie previews, do you see with the down-tempo version of some song you wouldn't expect? Yeah. Big one being Creep by Radiohead. They always have the children's choir singing Creep. I don't belong here. Or some counter-thinking version of a song. And sometimes that's what gets people to say stuff like, you know what, I didn't really like it when so-and-so did it, but I really like it when so-and-so did it. And that's when I go, well, that's because it's a good song. It's nice to know that
it didn't
songs,
resonate with you in this
for whatever
the
reason.
Version.
There is so much going on with a recorded song, the way it's recorded, when it was recorded, who recorded, how they sang it, how angry they were that day.
Well, as you said earlier, with the very same track, one producer can make it sound like gold and the other can leave you completely cold.
Exactly. And that's so cool, which is why I'm like, anytime anybody writes any song, you go, first of all, there's no wrong answer. Hmm. Second of all, it always has a second chance. Somebody else can take something and make it magical.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Exactly. You know, that is true.
Give me another standard that you adore. Another something that really matters to you. Something that lives deep in your gut.
I will say a song that I've been playing a lot because I got to sing it for the president.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Everybody, please have a seat.
Who?
Oh, you might know him. He's actually in town. I'll shoot him a text.
Nice drop of that name.
Well, you ask songs that kind of live deep within me, and that solidifies it.
That's probably
it.
A good reason.
It's a song that I learned in college because it had a lot of meaning to my friend who I lived with. Her grandfather was a songwriter, and this was like a song he always played for her. And so I remember hearing it and being like, oh, I know this tune, but really listening to it, and then just falling in love with it. So I can't say it without giving her credit. It is an example of a song that has lyrics that you almost can't write anymore. I mean, you could, but it would sound old-fashioned. But it's one of the greatest love songs ever written. Tune. That's all.
Torme. It's the
Torme's
only version.
Is a great version. Yeah, that's a really good one.
It's from That's All. The album is called That's All, and the song is That's All.
Oh, yeah, of course.
This is the version that I was like, oh my God, that song.
This song.
He does that crazy key change at the end.
Oh, the turn at the end. Yeah. The last verse, I guess you
Well, it's hip
say.
And romantic at the same
it
time.
It is so romantic. If you're wondering what to ask in return, dear,
everybody shut up and listen.
Turning this up.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone. That's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all, that's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world
for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore, that's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and the love time can never destroy. My demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore, that's all. That's all.
Ugh. Ugh. Gorgeous.
Everything on this album is
done.
Genius.
Great. Done.
It's called That's All.
He's somebody that anytime people ask me my favorites are, I say it specifically when the audience asking is much younger that don't know who Mel Torme is. And
right.
It drives me nuts. And I go home. Kiddies, check him out. He's got a great clip, him and Ella at the 1970, do you know what I'm talking about? You know where I'm going with
the Grammys.
The jazz thing.
Yeah, it's almost too cheesy for me to watch. I don't like to see Ella get dragged into that sort of thing.
I know, where they're just like totally appropriating the shit out of both of them. Like,
yeah.
Do the jazz thing. You guys are like the remaining of the old guard.
Yeah, you're like dinosaurs. Yeah, dance dinosaurs, dance.
Right.
But Ella, how do you explain to people what jazz is? How do you talk about it?
Well, the only way I can think of, I have a way. Maybe we could try.
Let me hear it.
Shop a bitty no one little baby oh and now the bob bo bay. Shoop a doo doo dab 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 dun 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 dee doo doo ba doo doo da doo da doo da. Shut any love so bad now. Beep doo 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 da doo 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 doo.
What is cool is that at that age, at that venue, which is kind of like being thrown into fire, but they're like ripping. And it's cool because people who don't know Mel, I always send that to people that aren't really familiar with Mel Torme. Obviously, you know, Ella is like the bomb, and obviously she's like a total like bebop riffing sort of queen, and that's what she does. And
among other things,
yeah, she had some other skills.
Easy.
But just her scatting was crazy, and so it's cool when you see Mel totally hold his own.
Well, that's because he studied her like a blueprint.
Oh,
I mean,
sure.
For him, she was the Rosetta Stone. Honored her every day of his life by listening to her, studying her. He memorized her scats. She's also past her prime vocally. You know, she lost, because of a stroke, she lost
right.
a lot of her vibrato and her ability to sustain. So she started to have to make new choices.
Yeah, but she still knew how to like work around it, which is pretty cool.
Oh, my God. I mean, she's Ella Fitzgerald. Her rhythmic sense is the best of all time, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, she could fart better than most people could sing. Do you love Ella Fitzgerald?
I mean, of course.
You do?
Of course.
Really?
Yes.
Do you listen to her?
Yes, of
course. Do you listen to her in front of other people?
Yes, of course.
Okay, stay with us. I promise to stop badgering Darren Criss about his love for Ella Fitzgerald. When we come back, I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook.
be woo ba woo ba dee dee do.
Shoot the old da ba bo da da dee do do.
I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook. My guest on this episode is the delightful Darren Criss. And before the break, I was testing him about just how deep his love for Ella Fitzgerald went. And naturally, the next question was, do you love Dinah Washington? Turns out, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah. So, God, get out of my head, Julian.
I don't want to, Darren.
I was going
to
say Dinah is someone who I'll put Dinah in. And then have that be the playlist. But she was like later, so it's like there's a lot of crossover.
And then she
crossover.
Did. She made some pop records,
yeah.
Which were not a huge success for her.
Right.
The problem Dinah had was, as with Ella, she was so incredibly versatile. She could sing essentially anything, but she didn't
right.
have Norman Grant's
so
helping her focus
it.
In on what would make her a legend.
I remember I bought, there's like the Best of Dinah Washington, and I remember like being like, oh, I didn't realize like this is the kind of songs that she cut. Even the arrangement. So I remember buying that because I remember hearing, oh, I could write a book. I could write a book.
Yes, her version
is the
supreme.
Version. Yeah. Is that to me is the go-to version of that song. Almost modern like,
well, she
arrangement.
Well, she has a quality, and I've often found myself thinking, what is it about Dinah Washington?
Like she's kind of sounds like Billy and kind of sounds like Ella combined. That's
she
my
She sounds
thing.
Sometimes like she's smirking. She has a wink.
Yeah, totally.
And this band, my God. Yeah, crushing.
I could write a book about that song. Music by Richard Rodgers, words by Lawrence Hart, arrangement by Quincy Jones, and the divine performance by Dinah Washington.
I feel like she was probably taking a cue from some of her contemporaries. Like she's got those like fall offs like that Nat would do, and
yeah.
She does some of those like she was singing along to Billie Holiday as
uh-huh.
a kid.
It's sublime.
And this might not be true, but hypothetically, if Dinah, for whatever reason, was whether consciously or unconsciously being influenced by her contemporaries and the way she sings. They were both around hanging out the same places. Like it's not like they were osmosing each other's talents, but I think there is an inevitable sound that happens on popular records.
Uh-huh.
I think there are things today how a lot of singers will sound the same or do the same runs. And so that makes,
yes.
that makes the same
I
session
totally
singers
agree.
Sing the same thing. And then what really freaks me out is when you see young singers, like I'm talking about like 11 years old, singing with an affectation of a Katy Perry or mm-hmm. something and doing sort of a faux accent.
But
almost.
Isn't that how people, and, young people find their way into
that,
the songs?
Exactly.
And
like,
into singing?
That, well, that's my, so my guy that I tried to, I mean, I tried to sound like Paul McCartney as a kid, like straight up, like I wanted to sound like Paul McCartney. So that was a huge influence in how I sing
now. I've never heard anybody say that before.
Oh my God. I mean,
because it gave you a way to sound like someone you could sound like.
Exactly. Not too dissimilar from like how we were talking about. People
right.
listen to records and go, I could do that. I
right.
mean, I didn't think, and nor do I ever think I would ever be able to be Paul McCartney, but he was one that I associated myself with. You know, like he had like this rounder kind of gravelly, he could be like rock and roll when he wanted to, but he could be sweet if he needed to. And I always
yeah.
tried to emulate that. And My voice is a mix of a lot of all my favorite singers and me trying to sound like them, especially right. the people that I don't sound anything like Rufus Wainwright, for example.
My phone's on vibrate for you.
You know, that's a singer and a songwriter that hugely shaped the way that I sing and write songs.
What's your favorite song of your own?
Of my own?
Let's listen to a Darren Criss song.
I mean, unfortunately, my favorite songs for me, I never sang any of them. I had other people sang them. So,
oh, like who?
Just like my friends.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, there's not enough recorded material of my stuff in the world. I will say there's a song that I wrote, a 1625 jazz, in, I guess, Nashville terms. And somebody used the numbers as a Nashville thing. That's as far as chords are concerned. Should we do it in C?
Yeah, I'll do it in C.
So C, A minor, D minor, G, which is like
one,
know, ever.
6.
Dum, 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 dum.
This is gold.
That one is a song called Don't You, but there's no good recordings of it. It's like, but that's like every, you know.
Right. I mean, there are only so many chord progressions in the world, and songwriters tend to reuse them.
Whoa, this is like a live, you're on YouTube. Oh, wow. I wanted this to be a standard.
But I refuse to let it stop. Let's pretend that both our lips are made of candy. After all, we need sweets every now and then.
So, okay, so here's the other harmony.
But don't you want the way I feel? Don't you want the way I feel? Don't you want the way I feel for you?
Here's the bridge.
Here we are, two strangers in a very different place. Who knows?
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, this is cool. I'm proud of this one. Minor 5.
Here we are with nothing but this little spark. It's too cold outside to lay this fire to rest.
Yeah, that's a nice surprise.
Why don't you go? How so very apropos. A goodbye just as soon as I said hello. Alright, I'll see you later, it's true. It's just a fancy for two. But what's the difference if it all could have been true? I guess this is better.
Don't do the chromatic thing.
But don't you want the way I feel? Don't you want the way I feel? Don't you want the way I feel
for
you?
Oh, and then we turn on my app. Going ham. It's a live cut.
Dude.
Yeah. That was a tune. It was a tune. I'd like to record a full on, like a real good version of that one day. I'd like to do it with like a jazz trio or something.
That's really lovely.
Thanks, man. After,
and it's interesting because
well.
you are doing things that are classic and things that are contemporary. I mean, you're using sort of big words or, you know, like apropos is definitely like a classic term. It's not something you hear in pop. But then when you repeat the hook, that's very contemporary. That's not something Cole Porter would have done.
Well, that's what I'm trying to bridge the gap.
But that's really great. All right, I want to ask you for a guilty pleasure.
I don't have guilty pleasures.
Great.
Because they're all pleasures. They wouldn't be guilty. But I did think of something for your show, because it is funny.
Oh, great. You did your homework. I'm very grateful.
So because the title of the song is at the top, it's an A song.
Uh-huh.
It always plays when I like plug in my phone
to
a car. And there's that moment where I go, oh, I can't play this song. But I always end up going, nah, I'm going to let it play. This is awesome. You go, I can't listen to a song from Bye Bye Birdie right now. But I do, because it's Jack Jones' cut of A Lot of Living to Do. And when you're driving around L.A., there are girls. You're just like, yeah, like transported back to like.
So happy right now.
Like mid-century.
Jack Jones, dude. I think this is a Naked American Songbook first.
For Jack Jones?
Yes.
Oh, I love Jack Jones. Oh my
God. Why do you fucking love Jack Jones?
I just love his voice.
He's the voice of the Love Boat.
A lot of living to do, which is like a silly kind of 60s song, like, hey, cha-cha-cha, living in my mid-century home in Palm Springs.
I love that song.
It's a great song, but that version in particular always makes me feel like such a chotch, but I'm like, no, I'm blasting this. I'm going to roll my windows down. There are girls.
just right for some kissing.
I just picture myself with like a maroon turtleneck sweater. Sitting in Palm Springs, even though it's 100 degrees outside, with like beige pants.
It's a dry heat.
Yeah. Martini, like having a chat with older Clark Gable, you know? Like,
soaking up what he's spilling.
Yeah. We're all soaking it together. Totally. Having this play. God. What a silly song, but when he sings it, I believe him.
Turn it up.
There are girls just right for some kissing, and I mean... to kiss me a few. Oh, those girls don't know what they're missing. I've got a lot of living to do. And there's wine all ready for tasting. And there's Cadillacs all shiny and new. Gotta move, 'cause time is a-wasting. There's such a lot of living to do. There is music to play, places to go, people to see. Everything for you and me. Life's a ball, if only you know it. And it's all just waiting for you. You're alive, so come on and show it. There is such a lot of living to do. Music to play, places to go, and people to see. Everything for you and me. Life's a ball, if only you know it. And it's all just waiting for you. You're alive, so come on and show it. There is such a lot of living, such a lot of living, such a lot.
That was Jack Jones singing A Lot of Living to Do.
From Bye Bye Birdie. Darren, Chris, why that version? Why Jack Jones?
Oh, God, I just in my general appreciation of, like, the other guy, you know? Like,
God, I love you. That most, is great.
Because most people wouldn't, like, go to Jack, but... he's such a good singer. Sinatra loved Jack Jones. He was one of his favorite singers. He said it. It's
singer,
writing.
Singer,
it's sort of antiquated, and it's like, and it's really just.
I can see why you love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. On Best of Jack Jones, there are a slew of songs that is sort of the undertone. There's this other song of like, oh God, it's so, you know, the song Wives and Lovers.
Yeah.
Okay, so that song's kind of, all right, listen up, women. You know, your man goes to work every day, and if you stop wearing makeup and making dinner, you know, he's going to leave you for a young... And it's like, whoa, dude, like, this
right.
is
We played
awful.
That on the first episode of this show with Chris Noth.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, that song's hilarious.
It's a dude song.
It is such a... It's literally out of Mad Men. Yeah. Of like, it's just the worst thing, but it's such a time capsule of that time.
This is how I talk to my dog. Stultifying effect on you. I love that song.
It's a
I
very
enjoyed it. I just
song.
Want to test you a little bit. I want to poke around and say, are you sure about this?
I'm sticking to my guns.
And
but
I
want to
know, like,
so...
are you into that song for purely ironic reasons, or there's something actually?
Oh, there's some kind of X factor about it. I just like the guy's voice.
He's a creamy, creamy tenor.
He's a creamy crooner.
You love it, my friend Darren Criss, sharing quite candidly, I might say, and I thank you for that, his deep love of the Great American Songbook, be it old, be it new, be it fresh, be it rotting. It's all good as far as you're concerned, and I love that. I thank you for sharing.
Thank you. I have a good bow for this whole thing that we could tie this up with as far as tying it to a contemporary thing.
I'd be a fool not to ask you to do that.
And this is also...
You're going
to
play us out?
This will be the last tune. This is plugging one of my great friends, a guy who was one of my favorite musicians in college, and then, you know, never meet your heroes except if they end up becoming your best pals and you're basically your roommate. He lives in my house. He's a British artist by the name of Mr. Hudson, who's come into a lot of success now because he ended up producing a lot of Kanye's records, and he's a hip-hop producer. And like me, he kind of revels in versatility and juxtapositions. And I was in college loving standards, loving contemporary music, and I heard a version of a standard, which was a Chet Baker song that he covered with a bunch of like 808s, 1980s, like the sound of hip-hop backing tracks, 808s and 909s. It's a drum machine. So he has this really great cover of one of my favorite standards, Everything Happens to Me. And he kind of contemporizes it in this kind of cool way. And it was everything that I loved. It was, I couldn't believe that this tall British dude, who now Kanye is like endorsing, was cutting records, standards being covered. And I loved that. And to this day, I love him. And it's one of my favorite cuts that he did, and it inspired me to do the same thing where I like taking standards and doing a similar thing to them. This is Mr. Hudson's cut of Everything Happens to Me, because the show is all about bridging the songbook of the classic era to the modern contemporary era. Everything Happens to Me.
I waited in the rain for a blind date who never showed. Then a 4x4 drenched my jeans as I tried to cross the road. Got back to the car in time to watch it being towed. Everything happens to me. At first I thought that you might break this jinx for me. Your love would bring an end to my despair. That would have been so cool. Not how it's meant to be. Instead you vanished into thin air. I've emailed and I've phoned, sent a text message or two. You told me to piss off, for that respect is due. I fell in love just once. Did it have to be with you? Everything happens to me. Everything happens to me.
Rainy Day Remix. A fascinating update of Everything Happens to Me by the producer, Mr. Hudson.
It's funny how something as simple as productions can, to go back to what we're talking about, just how the recontextualization of something can come to new ears, and right. Something as simple and almost sophomoric as the beat suddenly makes it go, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It suddenly made me go, oh, this is like modern, but it's just
the song.
A drum machine, but the song is still the song. If like a word or two changed.
The song is still the song.
Song's
that might
the
be the name of our episode this week on the Naked American Songbook. Thank you so much, Darren.
Thank
this
you,
has
man.
Been stupendous. I'm
Dude.
Very grateful. I know you're busy.
No,
I know
man,
you got a lot going on.
I've been really looking forward to this.
I think your fever broke.
That was really fun. Thanks, Joy.
The Naked American Songbook is a production of The Jonathan Channel, WNYC, and WQXR in New York City. Aaron Dalton is our producer and editor. Ellie Smerling is our assistant producer. Hilary Bonhomme is our intern extraordinaire. And Mike Shove is our executive producer. Our theme music is written by me. I'm Julian Fleischer. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends about us. Come back and listen again. And as always, keep it naked.
Dude, you don't even have to put this in the episode. Just let's listen to the song with me.
Damn right I want to listen to the song.
Oh my God. It's so cutesy.
Wait, before you start it.
Like it not, like it's not, what we got is hotcakes. A hubba hubba hubba, puffin' up fluffy and sweet. Now wait, and now flip it. Ba-dun-ga-dun-gun-gun, da-dun-bum, ba-dun-ga-dun-dun-dun, ba-dun-bum. Oh, you're right.
Yeah, you guys are troopers. This is honestly the shit that I can do, like, all in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, this can't be real. My phone just said something that I can't believe.
What?
I don't pay attention to a lot of social media, but
if this pops up. I go, what? Wesley Snipes is now following you.
During this interview?
Wesley Snipes. Wow, he must have heard I was doing Naked American Songbook.